Hello dear listeners, welcome to another episode of Follow Your Path. My name is Abdul Abid and I'm a Surgical Pathology Fellow at the University of Pittsburgh. And today we will be talking to Dr. Miguel Reyes Muica. He is a professor of pathology and the chair of pediatric pathology at the Children's Hospital of Pittsburgh. We are also joined today by a future pathologist, Virginia Fernandez. Welcome to the show, Dr. Reyes.
Thank you, Abdul, and thank you, Virginia. It's a pleasure to share with you my humble experience.
So starting off, can you please tell us a little bit about yourself, where you grew up, and where you went to medical school and residency?
Sure. I'm a fully made in Mexico product. I was born in Mexico City and grew up there, spent there most of my young adult life, and I went to the National University of Mexico, called National Autonomous University of Mexico, the Faculty of Medicine, the School of Medicine there, which is one of the largest schools in the world. My class, for example, have 5,500 people. So it's a large place. And Mexico City is also one of the largest cities on earth and is the largest in the continent together with Sao Paulo and LA. It was a busy place. It continues to be. And the school offered excellent level of training and education, but also had a significant number of difficulties given its size and the not plentiful resources like we see in other places in the world. But you can get one of the best educations there.
Oh, wonderful. So was there a particular faculty member or mentor that inspired you to choose a pediatric pathology as a career?
Well, yes, although before getting into pediatric pathology, I should tell you that my parents were physicians, both of them. And my father was also a lawyer in his later years, but I wanted to be like him and my mother, and I wanted to do internal medicine. But early in my medical school, I met my main mentor, someone that you see there, the picture there. His name is Rui Perez Tamayo. Sadly, he passed away this year in January at 97 years of age. And he was one of the huge figures in pathology of the 20th century. He trained as a pathologist with Dr. Lauren Ackerman at Washington University, and he was my mentor. I took my course of pathology with him. He invited me to work in his lab. He always did that every year, and I spent with him some years doing electrophoresis and extracting collagen. He was a collagen expert. And that really marked my life, because then I wanted to be like him, and I wanted to be a pathologist. And after that, I met a few other people that were doing pediatric pathology. I entered the residency of pathology with Dr. Perez Tamayo in the same School of Medicine of the UNAM, the National University of Mexico. And I rotated through his hospital, which was the center of the residency program, and the National Institute of Pediatrics, where three of his students were my mentors too. Their names are Cecilia Ridaura, Eduardo Lopez Corella, and Joaquin Carrillo. The three of them are excellent pediatric pathologists, and I follow on their steps. Later on, I told Dr. Perez Tamayo that I wanted to come to the U.S. to explore what there was here. I never planned to stay in this country. And he put me in touch with my second main mentor, the person that you see there in this picture, right there. Mm-hmm. Dr. Francisco González Cruci, a Mexican by birth. But he was the chief of pathology at Children's Hospital of Children's Memorial Hospital in Northwestern, now called Lurie Children's. I went to spend 1 year with him. I ended up spending 4 years with him. And the last of those 4 years was an official ACGME approved fellowship in pediatric pathology. That's how I started.
In your opinion, what makes pediatric pathology a unique specialty?
Pediatric pathology is a very different subspecialty within their field of pathology, because we don't define it by organ or system we define it by H, and the key word in pediatric pathology is development, Virginia. Everything that I see in the pediatric pathology world is linked somehow to development. So much that I always tell my trainees, residents, and colleagues, junior colleagues, that the first question that you ask when you are looking at a pediatric specimen is not where the lesion is, not how it started, how old is the patient? That's the most important question to set your mind towards the epidemiological possibilities, and from there you take over.
That's that's definitely, that makes it pathology, pediatric pathology, unique. Can you share an interesting case with us that has stayed on with you throughout your career in pediatric pathology?
Yes, and I apologize. I should have opened a picture, because I can do that if you allow me to.
Yeah, sure.
I was practicing as a pediatric pathologist in the National Institute of Pediatrics when I got a biopsy from a patient that had been previously biopsied. Actually, there was a biopsy from a patient that was sent to us, and Dr. Ridaura saw it, and then I got the full resection. Let me show you this picture, because it's an impressive image. This is, can I share my screen, or can
I? Yeah, you can share. You can share your screen. Yeah,
I can share my screen. So, let me just share it now. Oh, it's disabled. If you can enable the sharing, yeah.
Okay, there you go.
This was what at that time was called the case of the year, or the case of whatever year, week, month, etc. Mm-hmm. And this is what came to us, this patient. This was a neonate that no one knew if it was a girl or a boy. Mm-hmm. And there was a previous biopsy that Dr. Ridaura, who you see here, sitting with me in my office a couple of years ago, she came to visit. She called it a pigmented schwannoma, because there was pigment. And it was a lesion that had a lot of these corpuscles called Wagner-Meissner corpuscles, or Masson's corpuscles. But it turned out really to be a nevus. These are the corpuscles that we saw. This is a different case, but identical to it. Mm-hmm. The chief of the pediatric dermatology in that hospital was Dr. Ramon Ruiz Maldonado, a good friend of mine. And he told me, you know, I think this is a nevus. Mm-hmm. And then in Chicago, I saw this other case that looked similar, because it's a newborn with a giant pigmented nevus and a huge mass in the perineum. Mm-hmm. And we decided to publish this with Dr. Gonzalez Cruci, the plastic surgeon, Dr. Bruce Bauer, who continues to be my collaborator, and a former colleague of mine who sadly passed away with COVID last year. And we put it as a bulky nevocytoma of the perineum. And I have continued seeing these cases. This is, by the way, the surgery after this lesion was reconstructed. So that was the case that marked my my life professionally, to develop my research and academic career on the neural crest disorders.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful.
What would you say is the most gratifying aspect of your job?
Listen, children don't get sick very often. They can get sick mildly, frequently, but generally they are very healthy and resilient. And when they get sick, they can get serious disorders, and that's when we pathologists get to see them. Because of my interest in what I just showed you on the previous cases that I published, and I have continued researching those, I have a lot of interaction with families that have children born with those disorders, giant congenital nevi, which is a very rare disease. It occurs in 1 in 500,000 newborns. So frequently, patients and families from all over the world consult me, and my satisfaction of speaking with them, explaining what is happening, helping them to come to a fine diagnosis and a plan for therapy, that's probably the most rewarding aspect of my life professionally, the help that I can provide to children, which impacts many more years than what you do with an adult. When you are sick at 50, you don't have the same expectations of life than when you are sick at 5 months of age.
Yeah, that definitely is. It's very, very interesting. So from a training perspective, what is training like in pediatric pathology typically? And is there a fellowship and is there a board exam after that?
Yes. The answer to both questions is yes. There is a formal ACGME approved fellowship in pediatric pathology. There are about 28 programs in the country. Not all of them fill. There are about 40 positions open right now for pediatric pathologists in academic centers in the US. So it's a very marketable specialty. You have to spend a year of training in a center like this one. We actually have one of the oldest pediatric pathology fellowships and one of the most recognized ones in the world. Many people around the world have trained here. You spend 12 months looking at surgical pathology, autopsies, cytopathology, molecular pathology, you name it. And you see from infectious disease to neoplasia, from malformations to metabolic disorders. Anything and everything, from brain to skin. So at the end, you sit for a board exam sanctioned by the American Board of Pathology, which includes anatomic and clinical pathology questions in pediatrics.
And what advice would you have for residents who are considering this specialty during residency?
Well, embrace it with passion. That is not only for pediatric pathology. Concentrate in development, learn how organs develop and how they change. If you look at a histology slide from the heart of a 1 week old, it looks very different from a 1 year old, and it looks very different, that one, from a 50 year old. So you need to know how our bodies change with age. And you should embrace pediatric pathology with the passion to learn how you can help children. That's my strongest advice to someone that is dedicating her life to pediatric pathology.
Are there any resources that you would recommend or any societies that people can join to sort of like get a foot in the door for pediatric pathology?
Absolutely. There are multiple societies. The United States and Canada have a combined Society for Pediatric Pathology, SPP. You have the ability to enroll when you are a fellow or even before that as a junior member. It's very inexpensive and it allows you to access to all the resources that they offer. I have been president of that society. There is an equivalent society. That society has about 800 members, but there is an equivalent society in Europe called the Pediatric Pathology Society with a British spelling in pediatrics. And it has less members, about 190, something like that. And they both offer resources. They have meetings, yearly meetings, annual meetings, sometimes two meetings per year. And there is also a Society for Latin American Pediatric Pathology. There is an Australasian Pediatric Pathology Society. And there is an umbrella organization, which is called the International Pediatric Pathology Association, IPA, of which I was president too. And it encompasses all of the other societies. So if you are a member of any of the societies that I just mentioned, you are automatically a member of IPA. And I advise everyone to look them up. They are very collegial, very nice platforms to learn from. We give courses and seminars, etc.
So moving on to slightly different topic. Is there a WHO Blue Book for pediatric tumors? And were you involved in that project?
Yeah. Rumor has it, right? for 67 years, the WHO has been publishing their blue books, and you can see them right there at the end behind Dr. Perez Tamayo's picture. Those are really the main resource for pathologists around the world, and also for oncologists, radiologists, and epidemiologists in many different countries. In 2019, just before the pandemic started, I got news that the WHO wanted to plan a book on pediatric tumors. The problem is that, see guys, pediatrics is always pushed to the side in medicine. All pediatric specialties are a little bit pushed aside. And that is not an exception in pathology. So all pediatric tumors have been described in multiple blue books. If you open the OBGYN book, there are pediatric tumors, teratomas there. If you open the genitourinary book, you see testicular tumors there. If you open the thoracic thoracic tumors, you see pulmonary tumors or pediatrics there. But there was never an attempt to have a book written only on pediatric pathologies and mainly by pediatric pathologists. Only on pediatric tumors and mainly by pediatric pathologists. So I explained to the editor-in-chief, Dr. Ian Cree, and he heard me. He said that it was an important point because most of the descriptions of the pediatric tumors that appear scattered in the other blue books are nicely written by experts, but experts that are not pediatric pathologists and see very little numbers of pediatric tumors, whereas we see them every day. So he heard that and he asked me to become an expert editor of the book. I accepted, and he asked me to name a few other people that could be expert editors with me. And he had also invited a number of neuropathologists because brain tumors are the most frequent solid tumors in children. So between the group of neuropathologists that also wrote the CNS tumors book and a group of people that we suggested, we invited and we finished putting together a two-volume on pediatric tumors. This is the first time that there is this effort on pediatric tumors, and this is the first time that WHO has a two-volume book, and there are more than 400 authors. The book was published online in February. It's available. We use it every day, multiple times a day, and everyone has been very satisfied and excited with this. We are now reviewing proofs for the printed version, and we expect to have it soon printed, but it's available online, and it has a lot of digital images and a lot of links that you can go directly without trying to go through the pages, printed pages. So it's a very important resource, and I am very excited and proud with this thing. So thank you for asking.
Just one last question that I have. On your microscope, I see that there is a bird on the top. Are you a bird person, and what bird is that?
This is Ethan. It's a small eagle. This was the favorite toy of Nathan Carlson, and that's why the name of this bird is Nathan. Nathan was born with the disease that I study that sometimes does not have skin lesions but has brain lesions. He died, sadly, in Palo Alto in California. His parents contacted me and donated tissues from his autopsy and donated a significant amount of money for our research purposes. We have a funding page for the Nathan Carlson efforts. We are trying to develop a mouse model for the disease. And that's why I keep Nathan here to keep my attention in what I need to do.
That's amazing.
That's an inspiring story. Thank you. That's our show for today, folks. You can find Dr. Reyes on Twitter. His Twitter handle is mreyesm, M-R-E-Y-E-S-M. And thank you very much for listening to us. If you like the show, please like and subscribe to our channels on YouTube and Apple. And we will be back with another episode soon.
Special thank you to our listeners. Until next time, enjoy an excerpt from an upcoming interview with Dr. Marilyn Bui.
So in order for us to do our job, the patients and also the clinicians and also the politicians need to recognize our value, because if they cut our service, they're eroding into the foundation of the patient care. So this patient really inspired me. His name is Ray Paul. He's a sarcoma patient, and we have been collaborating on this, so he gave us open-ended permission to talk about him, his journey, and the book. So he had a mix of fibrosarcoma, and I have seen his specimen 3 times. But you know, for pathologists, we're generally not patient-facing, so we remember the case diagnosis, but we don't always remember patient's name. Until he contacted me, he said, "Dr. Bui, can I see my pathology? Because I want to stare the devils in the eye. I want to understand who and what I'm fighting with."